So last week we were encountering a conversation that took place between a man that met Jesus and a miraculous change that took place in his life. We were introduced to him a few weeks ago in John 9 as a blind man who was blind from birth, and Jesus found him and Jesus miraculously healed him. And this blind man received his sight. And last week, as news was getting out of this miraculous change, this man was brought before the religious leaders of the Jewish people. And the Pharisees, a part of that leadership, were not leaning in, interested into how this man received his sight, but they were really looking for a way to trap Jesus for what he had done. And John highlighted for us that this miracle took place on the Sabbath. And for the Pharisees who upheld their rules of the law, you do not work on the Sabbath. And Jesus was charged with working on the Sabbath because he took dirt on the ground, spit on it, and made clay. And for that reason, everything that took place in their eyes was wrong. And so they went to this man. This man gave credible testimony of what took place in his life. They didn't believe him. They brought his parents in. His parents were afraid. So they said, "You need to talk to him again. We're really not going to incriminate ourselves." And so they brought this man back in, interrogating him with the same questions. And this man did not back down in his testimony of the miraculous power of Jesus Christ. And it's for that reason that the Pharisees excommunicated this man and put him out of the synagogue. He was out of the faith community that had been with him every day of his life. But we were talking last week about the hard-heartedness of these religious leaders and the fact that they could not see the tangible power of Jesus, and they certainly would not see the miraculous power that he provides in salvation. But that we, because of Jesus Christ, have received a greater miracle than just receiving physical sight. Now today, we get to see how Jesus continues to minister to this man. This man that he met and changed physically is a man that he's going to return to change spiritually. What we're looking at this morning is really the high point of this interaction. Really, the high point of the contact that Jesus first made with this man. It's really the reason why he met this man in the first place. Jesus was the one who first moved into this man's life. And we saw this in chapter 9, verse 1. It was Jesus that passed by. It was Jesus that saw the man blind from birth. Jesus initiated the physical miracle. The man received sight in verse 6 as we read, "When he, Jesus, had said this, he spat on the ground, made clay of the spittle, and applied the clay to his eyes." And then Jesus instructed this man in verse 7 to go and to wash in the pool. Jesus is the one that's moving this man along from that first interaction. In verse 12, it's indicated that after healing this man, and this man had no contact with Jesus, his miraculous healing caused the community to question. So as I said, they brought him to the Pharisees. These leaders would not believe. But the man who received his sight would not deny the Lord. He did not understand exactly who Jesus was, but he certainly believed that Jesus was a God-sent man. He called him the prophet. The religious leaders were indignant. They attacked this man's character. And really, that's what hard-hearted people do. When they cannot stand on the facts, the truth, then they start smearing the character of the person that they're trying to disagree with. They excommunicate him. This man was dependent on the Jewish community his whole life. As he was in Jerusalem as a blind beggar, he would be dependent upon the alms of the community that would come by to support him. Now he receives his sight. Now he's probably thinking, I can be a productive part of the community of God, only to find out that he's been removed from it. And as we concluded our interaction with this man, and we continue to see how Jesus returns to him, I want you to see something from this passage that we're going to look at. That Jesus was seeking to perform a greater miracle in this man's life than receiving his sight. See, Jesus will do above and beyond all that we can ask or think. He does immeasurably more. But Jesus is always interested in touching the heart, in reaching down into someone's life to show them their great need and how he has satisfied that great need by dying on the cross for them. This interaction in John 9 highlights the contrast between faith and religion, true seeking and Jewish presumption. And so as I read the Word of God, I want you to notice how Jesus initiates a continued relationship with this man. I'll be reading from John's Gospel in chapter 9, verses 35 through 41. Jesus heard that they had put him out, and finding him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And he answered, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and he is the one who is talking with you." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, so that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind." Those of the Pharisees who were with him heard these things and said to him, "We are not blind too, are we?" And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But since you say, 'We see,' your sin remains." So as explained a few weeks ago, what takes place in John 9 is one of the miracles that Jesus performed that John records for us in his gospel. It's one of seven miracles. And John selected these miracles to show the divine power of Jesus, that he is the Son of God. Now, what we need to understand is Jesus ministered for 3.5 years, and John highlighted the fact in the very last verse of his gospel that there were also many other things which Jesus did, which if they were written in detail, I suppose that even the world itself would not contain the books that would be written, that there was so much more that he did. But this moment is highlighted to show us something unique about Jesus as the one who is the light of the world. That Jesus has come into darkness to draw people to himself, to shine the light of righteousness and holiness, the light of salvation in people's hearts. And he met this man, and he did a first work. But he's not done yet. The display of Jesus's power, specifically here in John chapter 9, became the impetus to divide people. I want you to understand something. Jesus did not come into the world to just cheer people on in the faith that they had and say, "Hey, you're doing good. Let's just keep going." Jesus came into the world to divide, to separate, to really cause people to consider the radical nature of what it means to be in a relationship with him. to be able to forsake everything for him and his kingdom. That Jesus is not just here so that people could complete their faith. Jesus came to totally dismantle the religious system that these people lived in, and to show that the Jews were spiritually dead if they followed the guidance of their spiritual leaders. Remember, Jesus said that he came to set father against son and brother against sister. Now, we say this and we think, well, you know, Jesus is love and he unites and he's strong in his nature of bringing people together. And he does so for those that know him and love him. But Jesus also came to tell us who are in the faith that we're not home yet, and that this world is dark and dead. And so he's not just here to fan the flames of religion that's happening. He's actually here to show people for the first time what God truly meant when he said that a man is made right with God through faith. That it's not a result of works. It's not a result of obedience. It's not a result of keeping rules. It's a result of faith. And as we're going to see in John 9, there's an object to that faith. And his name is Jesus Christ. So in verses 35 and following, when Jesus returns to this man, I'm going to mention something that we're going to look at in a little bit of detail, but I'm going to tell you now, we're not going to satisfy every question that you may have about what's taking place here. Because what we see in verses 35 through 38 is the wonderful tension between God's sovereign work